right, Fuzz Club. Today we're talking about The Awesome Machine and their album from 2000. It's called It's Ugly or Nothing. And the reason this was even on my radar was Ripple is going to put out a reissue of this on vinyl and stuff, part of their Beneath the Desert Floor series that they're starting up. And when I first heard about it, to me, it kind of sounded like the Brown Acid series, kind of. Maybe they'd find a track here and a track there from some old bands that didn't really get their due, and they put it into a compilation and put that out. But it sounds like it's going to be kind of more like reissuing some albums that have kind of flown under the radar, which is very cool. And I had never heard of this band. I had never heard this album, nothing. But I was excited as this was the first album in that series. So I decided to dive into it, and I was kind of blown away that I had never heard of it. I mean, it's from 2000, but you know, it sounds like a lot of those bands that got me into stoner rock to begin with, the Astro Queen and Dozer and Rollerball, and just some of those bands that, you know, just were early on and maybe had an album and then kind of disappeared. So I don't know how this one flew under the radar for so long, but that's why it's part of the series, and that's why it's now on our radar. So maybe before we get going, we'll just do some quick intros. It's just the three of us tonight, but Ben, why don't you say hi to everybody and we'll get started.
Hi, I'm Ben, aka Ben Riz, guitar player for Lost Dutchman and bass player for Southern Gate.
And Eddie.
I'm Eddie. I'm play guitar in The Endless and bass in Lotok and Iowas, or the upcoming Iowas, anyways.
Awesome. All right. So, anybody else have a similar experience to me with The Awesome Machine? Had anyone ever heard of these guys?
Not before the you'd pop the recommendation, and it's good. I'm never surprised, by the way.
I mean, they're from Sweden, also. So, like Sweden in 2000. When this was coming out, I mean, there's plenty of desert stoner rock bands out of Sweden. I mean, we talk about them on here all the time. So it's not like they're from like Ohio or something, you know, like it feels like this should have been, you know, on the radar somewhere, but apparently not.
Yeah, they got that Sweden vibe for sure. Like the kind of lowrider, like Dozer kind of sound.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. They're not afraid of the bass frequency in their mix either.
No.
Can you maybe expound on that a little bit? Because they do have that like exact sound. I mean, they sound like a lot of those bands that I had mentioned earlier, and Dozer being one of them. And I think they toured with Dozer for a while. They were probably, you know, pretty close with those guys. But, you know, what is it that makes it that sound? Is it, you know, the instruments, the recording, you know, what is it that gives
them that? So much of what's captured is like really all hanging on the microphone being used in the room at that moment in time. I mean, what you hear is literally what your ear should hear but doesn't. They were able to get a little bit more of that live in room sound, to my ears at least. I mean, it really sounds like whoever was mixing on that particular you know, album, they were brave, and not a bad thing, by the way. More people need to be doing that, because I mean, why should hip hop have all the bass, you know?
Yeah. Before they were formed in 96, from what I found. So this album wasn't really their first, but it seems like it was kind of like the quintessential Awesome Machine album, as far as I could tell. They did have their first demo was called Doom, Disco, Dope, Death, and Love. And I thought that was awesome. I didn't go listen to it. I didn't dig it up or anything and listen to it, but I thought it was maybe the coolest title I've heard in a while.
Yeah, it reminds me of the Amphetamine Reptile like record series that they had out, you know, about 20 or so years ago that everybody managed to snatch up.
They got discovered by a record label called People Like You, I think, around that time with that demo, and then went on to record this one. Another thing that I thought was interesting was the King Diamond guitarist, Andy LaRocque, was the producer on this, it sounded like. So I wonder what that had to do with some of that sound that we kind of talked about a little bit. Surprising, the King Diamond connection. Maybe you guys know more about that than I do. But
I just read that this today, actually, too. Hmm. But yeah, it's kind of very like experimental, like a raw, like playing style. Like they just put everything into it, you can tell, kind of like in the flavor of like how Caius does their guitar riffs, put all these crazy bends in there and all these effects on the bass and everything, and they did a really good job. It sounds awesome, man.
Yeah, It sounded like Andy also provided some, was it maybe the keyboards on No Share, I think, something like that. So again, just to like touch on how they kind of stayed under the radar for so long, especially with kind of like this like resurgence of stoner rock and stuff like that, it's just kind of surprising. If they had a connection to King Diamond in any way, in a producer capacity, or even providing some musicianship on a track. They also had a song in a movie called I Am Vengeance. So it just seems like they got plenty of tools in their pocket there to, like, you know, do pretty well. It just is surprising that they didn't. I don't know. Maybe they did. Maybe they did better than I thought. I didn't know about it.
Is that for something about the band too? Like,
to me, like in my ears, I was hearing like a little bit of Fu Manchu and like the riff. But the moment the vocals kicked in, it was like Solitude Eternus, like their finest moments, you know?
What did you think about the vocals? There was a lot of moments in this where he's got some different voices. He's got a kind of a yell in there and stuff. I thought it was really great in most moments. But then I thought, well, maybe that's their weak spot. Maybe it's the vocals that weren't, I don't know. Maybe it didn't hit everybody the same way. Maybe there were some other bands at the time, Dozer or something like that, that people maybe, you know, gravitated towards a little bit more or something like that.
Yeah, I could see that. I personally didn't really think there was anything off about the vocals. I mean, probably wouldn't have been my first choice for that particular flavor of music. But I think after, you know, you get past the first track and you give it a chance, I mean, you're in hook, line, and sinker. But there are some really grandiose moments that were like a little over the top.
Yeah, okay.
I didn't really mind the vocals either. Like, I compare this band to Caius a lot. There's a lot of similarities. And for Caius, like, a lot of people don't like them. The people who don't like them is mainly because of the vocalists sometimes.
Yeah.
For this band, like, it's kind of like the music is the same a little bit, but the vocals are more accessible, I think, than John Garcia.
Do you guys know the band Cowboys and Aliens?
Yeah.
We've talked about them a few times, just kind of even like off the podcast and stuff. And it's kind of one of those bands that either maybe you love them or you hate them. But I drew a lot of comparisons to Cowboys and Aliens. And I don't remember if Cowboys and Aliens from Sweden or not. I think maybe they are, or somewhere around there. But they had kind of a similar flavor to that. You know?
I'll have to check that out.
Yeah, they're pretty great, I think. Like I said, some people do the love or hate thing, but I like it. Some of these tracks, like El Bajo, How Am I to Know, Out of Fuel, all that kind of stuff, are like that straight up stoner desert, driving through the desert kind of like riffage. And then there was a song in there called No Share, which was their like more epic like finale to the album. And I wanted to talk about that one a little bit because I thought it was really interesting. It was a departure from a lot of the rest of the album, but in a kind of a great way. Like, it kind of like had a Led Zeppelin vibe to me. It had some keyboards on it. It was more drawn out. It was a little bit more epic, a little bit more, I don't know. I don't know if psychedelic is the right word for it, but maybe just a little bit more, you know, interesting or something than the straightforward stoner rock that was on there. Was there any other moments like that? Anything that stood out for you guys or thoughts on No Share?
Yeah, that was one. Okay, one of my favorite songs too, just because it's so experimental and it's got the organ in there and everything, and it's a different vibe from what else is going on in the album.
Yeah,
I felt like that particular song was like that Sesame Street moment where, you know, one of these things doesn't look like the other. But I think that when an artist does that well, you subvert expectation and you sink the hook in even further with the listener. I think they probably hit that one out of the park. Now, the two tracks after that were like kind of just like raw noise, I probably would have left one of those out.
What is that? I think Untitled, it says on this track list, is after No Share.
It's just static.
I removed that one as I added it to my playlist. I might have removed it right away, maybe.
Yeah, it was just static. I mean, it also shows you, I listened to the whole blessed thing. I was finishing up my work day and I'm like, this is like so clutch right now. And I mean that like as in it was needed, not as in they sound like the band.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, I think that other one's like Cruise Control had a bit of a experimental, like laid back vibe to it. This one didn't grab me though as much as like No Share, or kind of lost me on Cruise Control a little bit.
Yeah, just reading back over this write-up about some of it, and it does say Andy LaRock, King Diamond, and Merciful Fate, apparently the main engineer and co-producer. And then I was looking at the track list here. So, yeah, Cruise Control is number 5 right there in the middle. No Shares at number 10, and then Untitled, that's Static or whatever, is after that. So, yeah, interesting.
No, think about it. I think Andy LaRock, he took over for Hank Sherman in Merciful Fate after he'd passed.
Okay.
So, I mean, you know, that's a big pedigree right there. And kind of circling back around to that, yeah, a little unusual that a guy who, you know, has made a living off of being like King Diamond's like right hand, producing your album. I'm surprised this did not move more just based off of that. But also, yeah, you got to know who Andy LaRock is in order to appreciate him.
Yeah, I mean, I don't really, and I'm not like a huge King Diamond or Merciful Fate avid listener. But I mean, obviously, you know, we know the name, you know, even you'd think that even just the name alone was like, well, I mean, this has got to get a little bit more play, but I don't know. I didn't listen to anything else by them. So this was the only album that I listened to by them. Did anybody else check out anything before or after this? Because they had plenty. They've been around. It's not like they disappeared. I mean, they've made music.
Yeah, like if you like this one, you'll like the first album, but for different reasons. I don't want to spoil too much for you. Just because, like, you need to sit down with it. It's great.
Wow. Okay. Cool.
I haven't heard anything else with this album so far.
I'm excited for this reissue from Ripple and the whole series. I kind of touched on that a little bit, called Beneath the Desert Floor, where he's going to put out, you know, different albums from the last, you know, 30 years or so in the stoner rock, desert rock, doom arena, and put those, reissue those out probably on vinyl, bands that hadn't been on vinyl before, didn't quite get their due, something like that. So I'm interested to see, you know, what other bands come up, and I'm sure that we'll be talking about them a lot. But as a first one, I thought this was like perfect, because man, it's just got that sound. It's just got that perfect like stoner desert rock sound. So pretty cool, but pretty excited for that. The artwork, I thought about not sharing the artwork at all. But I thought maybe it was worth talking about just for a second. It's funny to me that the album is called It's Ugly or Nothing, because this album cover is a little ugly. But if I was going to go for it, I would have made it ugly, like real ugly. I would have made this thing fucking ugly. This one's just a little plain, to be honest. It's not as much ugly, but
I would have given it a crying baby cover myself.
Sorry, say that again.
Said I would have given it a crying baby cover myself.
Yeah, something like that. I mean, there's a lot of ways to make an album cover ugly, and I feel like they could have went for it, at least with the reissue. I haven't seen any new artwork, so we'll see, I guess, what they do. But, you know, this wasn't their first album. It wasn't their last album, and it's kind of like their big album, it sounds like. And, man, I would have really uglied this thing up, I think.
Yeah, they definitely took the minimalist approach to it. And
yeah.
Good color scheme, though.
Especially for a band called The Awesome Machine. I mean, it's not awesome or ugly, really. It's kind of neither. But,
it's not exactly Plain Brown Rapper or like Ralph's brand, but kind of close.
Yeah. All right. Well, there's not a whole lot to say about that, but I thought I would at least show the artwork for a moment there.
How do you guys feel about the band name itself? Like, do you think that might have thrown some people off?
Yeah, I think that it probably did. But, you know, I don't know much about that time period. I wasn't really listening to this kind of stuff at that moment. I was, you know, pretty young. But there are some bands that are similar, like Cowboys and Aliens. Probably a terrible name for a band, to be honest. The Awesome Machine, probably terrible. I mean, you know, you look at the 90s and how kind of like all over the place and eclectic that era was of music in general. And then you add like a stoner or a desert rock thing to it. I mean, there was probably a lot of goofy names, and I know that there are. I don't know how to feel about it. I mean, it's kind of just like, it's funny. I've written an article about like humor in stoner rock, and I talk about it quite a bit, and there's plenty of it. There's no shortage of like this kind of lightness to stoner rock. So I like that. I like the fact that they don't take it too seriously and they call it the Awesome Machine. Yeah. You know, I like that, but is it the best name? I don't know, probably not.
Yeah, I mean, what's in a name, though? I mean, you know, you have direct peers of theirs, the Atomic Bitch Wax. I mean, yeah, that's, yeah. Yeah. It's a catchy name, but it's kind of dumb, too.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. That's a good example. Yeah, there's plenty of them.
It's just the stoner rock genre. It's like that's how it goes usually.
Yeah.
All right. Well, really lean into the ridiculous, we do.
Yeah, but like I said, it, with a name like that, man, I would have went over the top with just ugly and awesome and went for it. But you know, were there any low points of this album? Anything that anyone just didn't like, didn't care for, thought they could do better? Hope they do better. Maybe something that's even cleaned up for the reissue, as far as like the sound or anything like that. Was there anything that stood out to anybody?
Didn't really think that there was anything wrong with the mix. I mean, you know, like it was pretty burly. I think just that last track of like a record skipping untitled, like, I mean, maybe it was just put in there to fill space for the LP or something. That's the only really thing that I would pick off of that, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
So, I thought go ahead.
No, I
thought the album, like the sound quality was really, really good. It was really punchy and powerful. And even like all the guitar tones and everything was wicked.
Yeah. Yeah, it really was. For an album that didn't quite get its due, it wasn't because of that. You know, it had great sound quality to it, great tone to it. Yeah, back to that untitled track thing. Like, especially now in like the digital age, it's kind of strange too. Like, because it counts as a full track. It's not like you know, just something that comes after a song, or if it's not like, you know, hidden. It's not like a hidden track or anything. You got to like put track number 11, you know, on there, and then you get it on your playlist or whatever you're doing, and you're like, what is this? You know?
Yeah, something's broken.
Yeah. All right. I don't have a whole lot else to say about this one. I recommend it to everybody to go check out, especially if you're into the stoner rock and desert stuff. It's a great album as far as that like early 2000s sound. Like I mentioned, Astro Queen or Cowboys and Aliens or Rollerball or Dozer. I think they went on tour with Karma to Burn maybe for a while, it said. You know, fans of that kind of stuff, I think, will really dig it. And I'm pretty stoked for it to be reissued and stuff. And I think that it's one that definitely should be unearthed and talked about. So I don't have anything else. You guys got anything else to say about this one?
Other than everybody really ought to take a moment, save it on your Spotify or however you stream music, or here's a dangerous thought. Go to your local record store and buy a copy. Support somebody's cheeseburger habit, but get it today.
I think the pre-order is up for the Ripple release, but I don't think it comes out until like January. So just so if anyone's looking for it, which they should be, but I don't think it's quite out yet, but pre-order I think is up.
Yes, it's a good album. I definitely recommend it to people who's looking for something like new to listen to with the desert scene.
Yeah. All right. With that, we got a short one today. We'll wrap up. Ben, you want to tell everybody what you're up to with Lost Dutchman and everything?
Well, slow goings with Dutchman, but we still have our EP on the horizon for April and next year. We're going to do it on Stoner Mardi Gras. So y'all pack your bowls and set your calendars, and we should have you covered as far as the soundtrack.
Awesome. Eddie?
The only thing that's like on the go right now is The Endless. We just released our first single off our debut album that's coming out January 23rd. And there should be another single out in mid-December. And we got a show coming up February 3rd for the release show.
Cool. And we just did an episode of Real or Fuzz together, Eddie and I. So you can go check out an episode of Real or Fuzz.
It's a good one. It's better than the one with me.
Nice. Yeah, that was cool. All righty. I think that's it. Everybody go check out The Awesome Machine and It's Ugly or Nothing. And we'll catch you on the next one.
All right. See you guys.
Later.
Y'all good night.